ॐ जननीं शारदां देवीं रामकृष्णं जगद्गुरुं पादपद्मे तयोः श्रित्वा प्रणमामि मुहुर्मुहुः. Shankaracharya was insisting upon acquisition of discrimination and dispassion. Without these two, it is impossible to progress in spiritual life, whatever else we may be doing. So, now comes the important question. Suppose somebody had been equipped with all these so-called sadhana, chatushtaya, sampatti, spiritual qualities that are needed for the completion of sadhana. Such a person becomes a jivan mukta or living free. Of course, we are talking about three types of results will be there if a person well equipped with all the necessary spiritual qualifications realizes that he is the Atman. These are called three different types of liberation. The first is called Kramamukti, and he goes from a lower state to a higher state, and the highest of such a dualistic state is called Brahmaloka. There he fulfills whatever desires were not allowing him to go forward in spiritual life. And from Brahmaloka, he continues his sadhana and he attains ultimately his oneness with his true self. And that is called Kramamukti or gradual liberation. Then there is another type of mukti. For some reason, because of prarabdha or whatever, a person can attain this realization only when this body dies. Such a state is called Videha Mukti. Deha means body, Videha means after the fall of this body. Then there is a third type of person. He attains liberation and his body and his mind seem for all practical purposes functioning as well as anybody's body and mind. And usually we call such persons jivan muktas. That means even while the body is there, mind is there, but they are completely free from the idea that I am the body and I am the mind. Now, is there any way to recognize such persons, or even those persons? How do they look upon their body mind? How do they look upon this world? And what would be the type of actions and reactions towards the events that happens in this world? Before going further, I would like to give you a small example. Supposing Swamiji or Sri Ramakrishna or even Holy Mother are alive today, right now, and just imagine they might have got this infection, corona infection. Now, what would be their attitude towards this? I can tell you right now, say his birth and living for some time and then getting disease, old age, these are part of life. Nobody can prevent it. And that has happened to this body and mind, not to me. And that is the most natural thing. Let this body be there. Let it go or let it suffer. Let it enjoy. Whatever happens, it doesn't bother me. To reinforce this beautiful idea, I recollect an incident from the life of Mahapurush Maharaj. Once, towards his end of his life, he was severely sick. So one day, a close devotee came to him and asked him, "Maharaj, how are you?" And he said, I am fine. But the devotee said, I came to know that you are suffering a great lot, and that's why I have come to see you. Immediately, Mahapurusha Maharaj replied, oh, you are talking about this body. Of course, the body is not well. It is old, and that is the most natural thing in the world. On another occasion, some devotee came and asked him, Maharaj, how old are you? Mahapurusha Maharaj smiled and said, I am never born, so how can I say how old am I? Of course, you see, these are not mere words. This is their practical realization. They know they are not the body and the mind. So, our point is, even a sadhaka, if he was trying his hardest to acquire these qualities called discrimination, dispassion, and with tremendous faith in the Guru, in the words of the scriptures, is putting forth all his efforts, and he had advanced. Maybe he has not realized, but he has advanced a great deal in spiritual life. How does he look upon his own life and the events that take place, whether they are happy events or unhappy events? Not to speak of truly realized souls. So the condition of both these is similar, and that's what we are going to discuss in many of the verses of today. I am going to deal with verse 413. Please do not forget, from Viveka Chudamani, written by Shankaracharya. Chayeva pumsaha paridrishyamanam abhasa rupena falanubhutya shariram arat shavavat nirastam punarna sandhatte idam mahatma. After the body has once been cast off to a distance like a corpse, the sage never more attaches himself to it, though it is visible as an appearance, like the shadow of a man, owing to the experience of the effects of past deeds. Of course, you know, this kind of translation creates a little bit of difficulty unless a person had studied the scriptures for quite a long time. First, let us take this analogy he is giving. You are walking in the sunlight, and there would be inevitably a shadow will be there. And sometimes the shadow has to pass through unclean places. Sometimes it falls on thorny bushes, and sometimes some people may even trample upon it. But how will you react to that? Mind you, nothing is happening to you, but something is happening to your shadow. Do you even cast a glance and say, poor shadow, and that is me, and I am suffering so much? And that is exactly the type of reaction a realized soul has towards his body, towards whatever happens in his life. Chaya iva pumsaha purushasya chaya iva, like the shadow of a person. Paridrishyamanaha, the shadow is all the time visible. Only when there is no light, it is not visible. Otherwise, it is always visible. And it appears like a human being. That is what abhasa rupena, only mere appearance, but it doesn't make the slightest difference in his life. The shadow doesn't feel happiness or unhappiness. So also the person doesn't identify himself with the shadow. So he doesn't feel anything, whatever happens to it. So who is that person? A person who had realized the highest truth. And what is that truth? That aham brahmasmi. This is being said here. There are some mahatmas. Mahatma means we are also atmas, but we are not mahatma. Of course, the familiar remembrance we all have, as soon as we hear the word Mahatma, Mahatma Gandhi. Why was he called a Mahatma? Because He identified himself with all humanity wherever they were, whether it is in South Africa, India. Suppose he happened to go to America, he would immediately, very naturally, without any effort, he would identify himself with all the people who are both suffering and also enjoying. He will rejoice at the joy or happiness of people who are enjoying, and of course he will feel tremendous sympathy as if he himself was suffering. That's why he was called Mahatma. And this is the characteristic of every great soul, and it is inevitable. But then let me discuss something very important. Once a devotee was sitting with Bhagavan Ramana Maharshi, and he was talking only about pure Vedanta. Find out who you are. You are the Atman, and this world is mithya or mere appearance, and it should never affect you. The devotee said, Bhagavan, the whole country is getting agitated and it is gearing up to fight against the oppression of the British government. You are a great soul. Why don't you go and encourage people so that India will very soon get independence, freedom from this oppressive government? Then Bhagavan smiled and said, you think that only when I go and give talks, gather some people and incite them and make them do something, only then do you think I am doing everything? And if I am sitting here as if I am not doing anything, a profoundly meaningful statement. In whatever state a great soul, a Mahatma, may be, even lying down, even sick, even in a mountain cave, but his very thought, very well-wishing mind, it can create a tremendous amount of influence, and that is what we know what happens in the life of Swami Vivekananda. When these revolutionary activities and ideas were spreading all over India, we know that Swami Vivekananda was not alive. But if you glance back and say, who was the main reason, main inciter, main inspiration behind all these activities of all these patriotic Indian people trying to get rid of this foreign oppressive government? The inevitable answer would be Swami Vivekananda. But he was not there. He was not there for gross, foolish eyes. He is present everywhere and he is inspiring people. These are his very words. I shall not cease to inspire every man and woman until they know I am God. So Swami Vivekananda also was his power was also recognized by the British government. That's why, even though directly he was not involved in politics, his books were completely banned by the British government. Now think a little, a minute, and say that he never spoke about rebelling against the British government. You will not get one single sentence in the whole complete works of Swamiji. And yet, why did the British government ban his books? Because they found young people, and inevitably, whenever they were caught, these were the rebellious people, revolutionaries, and they inevitably had some teachings of, some book of Swami Vivekananda. So British government, I am sure, definitely examined all these books, but they did not find any direct evidence, but they understood. Somehow he was inspiring people. Here I just wanted to add one corrective. Swami Vivekananda was by many people known as a revolutionary patriot, the greatest patriot India had ever produced. And by the way, every realized soul is the greatest patriot not of the India only, but of every human being, of every country, because they do not come for the sake of a particular language, religion, race, or society, etc. These great souls, before their realization, they might be identified intensely with a particular religion or race. But once they realize, I am Brahman, then their only endeavor would be that wherever there is a living creature, or even for that matter, non-living thing, anything that is existing, I am that. That feeling would be there. So, coming back to our Swami Vivekananda, and if we study Swami Vivekananda, what do we find? We find that there was no Swami Vivekananda. He was only an outward form. Who was there inside him? Nothing but Sri Ramakrishna. And there was no Ramakrishna. Who was there inside Ramakrishna? The Divine Mother, God, Brahman, Atman. That is the only reality which is inspiring. But as I said, Swami Vivekananda was an inspirer of not only merely the struggle for independence in every country, but he is the inspirer of anything that is noble, anything that is the higher ideal than ordinary eating, mating and dying. So, such a person, how does he look upon this world? And we have to remember, he has been enjoying a beautiful fruit of his spiritual sadhana, practice. This is called phala anubhutya. He had anubhuti, direct experience. And he is enjoying this phala, the result of his spiritual practices. And what is that phala? What is the result? That beautiful experience, aham brahmasmi. So this is what Shankara Bhagavan is presenting it to us, phalanubhutya, brahma sakshatkara anubhutya, by the direct realization of the fact, I am Brahman. So for such a person, still there is body and mind, even after the realization, such a person is inevitably known as a Jivan Mukta, living free, and it looks as if he is eating, he is drinking, he is sleeping, he is smiling, he is frowning, he is happy, and he gets annoyed. All these things happen. But then that is our attribution. It is not their result. What do they see? They don't see any second. Only one without a second. Therefore, if there is no second, there would be no experience as we all experience. But their body mind seems to react. Let me narrate a small experience. When I was in UK many, many years back, a devotee, English devotee, used to come, and at night we used to read the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, and one day he was also present, and the Gospel was being read, and there is this passage, somebody did something, Sri Ramakrishna got annoyed. This English devotee stopped the reading and turned towards me and said, "Oh, even God realized souls also get annoyed and angry and all that." Then I had to reply to him, "Yes, of course, they will behave exactly like anybody else in this world. Then what is the difference between them and the other people?" I said, first of all, if a Jivan Mukta, a great spiritual personality, gets very annoyed or angry, and many things happen. First of all, he is not affected. Secondly, it doesn't remain long. Thirdly, the moment the purpose is over, always there is a purpose behind the action and reaction of these great souls, because they do not live, they do not act and react just like a ignorant person. In fact, even to use that word, they, would be a wrong word. It is God who occupies that particular body and mind and acts and reacts for the good of many people in this world. So it is God who gets angry, it is God who seems to be pleased, it is God who seems to scold some people, it is God who seems to grant the greatest of experiences with the utmost ease, just by either touching or speaking or even by a glance or even by just a thought. And that is why people used to flock round Sri Ramakrishna, Holy Mother, Swamiji and others, like flies attracted by a sweet, or like a moth attracted by a light of a lamp. So when they do it, there is absolutely a heaven and hell difference between their being angry or annoyed and our getting angry and annoyed. Then I added a little bit and said, supposing you get angry at 9:30 or 10 o'clock at night with somebody, and afterwards how much time it takes for you to go to sleep, because your own anger makes you so lose all your sleep, peace of mind, etc. You become extremely agitated. Whereas Sri Ramakrishna had uttered a very great word of anger, and next second his mind could be like a child's mind, entirely diverted from that instance. Anyway, I cannot resist myself quoting an incident in the life of Sri Ramakrishna. Once Sri Ramakrishna was returning from Calcutta, and on the way he saw some colored sweets in a sweetmeat shop, and somehow, like a child, he developed a liking for it. So he came to Dakshineswar. Next morning he gave a little money to Latu Maharaj, Swami Adbhutananda, and told him that, my boy, go quickly and buy these colored sweets which we saw yesterday and bring. So Latu Maharaj took the money, started for Calcutta. And on the way, he used his own intelligence. Why should our master eat these impure and dirty sweets? He wanted to eat sweets. So let me go to a devotee and ask them to prepare, and they will be feeling blessed, and Sri Ramakrishna will be also pleased, because it will be purest of the sweets prepared with the purest of devotion. So he went to a devotee's house, told them, and immediately the house ladies started preparing a beautiful sweet. And it is not something which can be prepared instantaneously, so it takes several hours. Meanwhile, it was lunchtime, so they made what is called in Bengali a special curry called chachadi. And he had eaten, and that day that chachadi seemed to be extraordinarily tasty. So having finished, and then they prepared the sweets, and packed it and then gave it to him, and he happily came back to Dakshineswar. Meanwhile, Sri Ramakrishna was waiting and waiting and waiting. He was extraordinarily annoyed. And then Latu Maharaj explained the whole thing, and Sri Ramakrishna was even more annoyed. I did not want to eat the sweets from the devotees. I wanted to eat the sweets, colored sweets, that I saw in the glass jars of the street vendors. But Latu Maharaj was in such a happy mood, he did not pay any heed to what Sri Ramakrishna was telling. He, on the contrary, was telling, Mushai, sir, today that lady had prepared chachadi. It was so tasty, I cannot describe to you. Now Sri Ramakrishna was extremely angry, because he did not get the sweets and he was waiting. Now, after hearing this statement, instantaneously he forgot all about the sweets, and he turned towards Latu and said, Sala, you rascal, have you brought for me? He said, no, I thought that you would not need it. No, go tomorrow and get her prepare the same thing, exactly same way, and bring it. So Lata Maharaj had to go and then get it prepared. Of course, the devotees were in high heaven, and he brought. Sri Ramakrishna ate, and he really said, "You are absolutely right. This must be a cook from Vaikuntha, or as I say, probably at the end of this life, she will go to Vaikuntha. She will become head of the department of Chachadi there." And so, what is the point we are talking about? This Ramakrishna, who seemed to be so angry in a millisecond after hearing about Chachadi, forgot about the whole thing about the sweets. His mind was now totally remembered only about Chachadi. Such is the state of every Jivan Mukta. So, Sri Ramakrishna, as well as scriptures tell us, their anger, their any type of negative emotion, first of all, it is the greatest blessing. Secondly, it is only momentary, like a line drawn over the water. As you are drawing, there appears to be a line, but really it won't be there. Coming back, when a person has this phalanubhuti, this tremendous result of spiritual sadhana, which is God realization, Atman realization, how does such a person look upon this body and mind like we look upon a shadow? That means whatever happens to the shadow, it doesn't have real existence, first of all. Secondly, it doesn't have any real substance. It is only a mere appearance and nothing happens to it. And paridrishyamanam abhasa rupena. Like a abhasa means like just like an appearance only, like an appearance of wonderful cool water in a, which we call mirage, on dry hot sands. Chaya iva, like a huge shadow. So, shariram arat shavavat nirastam. How do you find that there is a body and it is lifeless and you go along with it and you throw it in the crematorium? Now, until it is cremated, how do the other people look upon that shava? Just as we want to be as much away from a corpse, so also these realized souls do not have the least bit of attachment. Here attachment means, I am that dead body, nobody would like to think. Not only that, but even if it is our nearest and dearest, whom we loved so much, as soon as the prana departs, we are frightened, we hesitate even to touch. Of course, we have to touch, and when we touch, until we take bath thoroughly, we won't feel at peace. So, these great Jivan Muktas, they look upon their body like a shava, like a shadow, and they never develop any attachment, as we do not develop any attachment to a corpse. So, this is the meaning of this verse, that even while living, while we are practicing, it may not be our realization that I am not the body, but we have to say, I have a body. First state of ignorance is, I am the body, I am the mind. Second stage of spiritual development is, I have a body, I have a mind. Third stage of development is, there is no body, there is no mind, there is no I, there is no you, everything is nothing but pure Brahman, pure consciousness. So, after the body has once been cast off to a distance like a corpse, the sage nevermore attaches himself to it, though it is visible as an appearance, like the shadow of a man. And this result comes because of what? Owing to the experience of the effects of past deeds. So, why does the body remain? This is a big question, really not very big, but it appears for some people as a big question, that after realization, when a person had completely come to know that I am not the body-mind, why does the body still remain? even after realization. So the answer is twofold. From the viewpoint of ordinary people, they say the body is there because of the effects of past life, which we call prarabdha. Prarabdha means that already that which started to bear fruits, the results of our past actions, which started to bear fruits and which we are experiencing, is called prarabdha. So it is said, as we all know, the effects of purva karma, purva janma karma, are divided into three. Sanchita means accumulated, prarabdha means that which started to yield fruit, and agami means what is going to fructify in the future. Now, our Vedanta scriptures inevitably tell us, when a person realizes God, then he will not have accumulated karmas, will get destroyed, and future fruits also will get destroyed, but prarabdha, because this body is still there, and it will continue. How? Like a potter, in the past he used to take a wheel, put some wet clay, and then shape into different pots. So sometimes he just whirls the wheel, and for some reason he goes away. And the wheel goes on whirling until its initial force comes to a stop. So that is the example given. This body is like that wheel which has started, and even though realization had taken place, but in reality the person, the potter, is not there. The jivatma has become paramatma now, and this is mere shell, and so the body appears, mind also appears. This is from the ordinary point of view, and scriptures also tell us these things, that when other people seem to see this body and mind alive and working, they should not mistake that the previous resident, who now became a realized soul, is still there. No, that person has long before became a realized soul. But for others, it looks as though the body mind is there, and that same old soul is still residing, even though the person has realized. So such a person comes to be known as Jivan Mukta. But this word Jivan Mukta is a meaningless word from the viewpoint of a realized soul, because the realization is, I was never bound, I was never born, I never did any sadhana, I never became mukta, because I am Nitya Mukta. This is how such a person never develops even the soul, the God, who is using that instrument, body, mind. It appears to everybody as an object lesson, that he is not attached, it is just there, and because of prarabdha, the body is going on, and as soon as the prarabdha comes to an end, the body, what we call, dies, and that is the end of that particular person's travel in the samsaric world. What is the lesson we have to learn? That we also gradually have to develop the attitude that this is not my body, this is not my mind, it is something which is only an appearance, like a shava. That is why in tantrika practices there is called shava sadhana. So the whole body, from birth to death, we are doing nothing but shava sadhana. But when we have realization, it becomes shiva sadhana. Shava becomes shiva. So in the next verse, Shankaracharya is telling the same idea, prarabdha. Prarabdha means those results of karma that we did in the past have already started fructifying, and that is what other people see, never a realized soul. So what would be that particular individual, realized soul's outlook, take up on his own body and mind? This is being explained. Prarabdha sutra graditam shariram prayatu vatishtatu gorivasrak. न तत् पुनः पश्यति तत्त्ववेत्ता आनन्दात्मनि ब्रह्मणि लीनवृत्तिः. The knower of truth does no more care whether this body, spun out by the threads of prarabdha work, falls or remains, like the garland on a cow, for his mind functions are at rest in Brahman, the essence of bliss. So, a beautiful description of a Jivan Mukta here. So, he gives a beautiful analogy. Shankaracharya is well known for his analogies like Kalidasa, like Sri Ramakrishna. So, here he is giving the analogy. Remember, in the earlier verse we discussed, it is like a shadow. Here he is telling about there are cows. And Hindus, you know, we worship the cows particularly on a particular day after Diwali is over. And that on that auspicious day, all the instruments, whether it is car, cycle, etc., are brought out and cleaned and worshipped. Similarly, animals are also worshipped. So, cows, of course, you know, cow is a very sacred animal for Hindus. So, on that day, they put a beautiful garland round the neck of a cow. And I have seen that on that day, the cows are fed with beautiful, what we call vada, prepared in South India, plenty of a whole basket full of vadas and a basket full of sweets, because Gomata Puja is taking place. Same thing happens to bulls and many other buffaloes and many other animals. Now here, when a garland is slung around the neck of a cow, do you think the cow becomes very ego bloated? Oh, how much they are honoring me. I am being decorated with a beautiful garland. In fact, if it can get, it will eat. There is no difference for it between a garland and a food material or some grass that is laid in front of it. Suppose by chance, perchance, that garland falls away. Then does it matter for the cow? Does it, oh, ho, 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 this beautiful garland was decorating me and it has fallen. Now I have fallen from that high state. Do you think the cow gives a second thought? That is the analogy. A Jivan Mukta, living free, even if there is body and mind going on, this body mind is compared like the garland on the neck of the cow. Whether body remains, it falls, whether it is healthy, whether it is sick, whether it comes across enjoyable things, or it suffers, it doesn't least matter. It is there, something is happening to something else, I have nothing to do with it. So, Prarabdha Sutra Graditam, this body, how does it continue? Because of the effect of Prarabdha. Prarabdha is like the sutra, like the thread. And just as we weave a beautiful dress, taking up some threads, so also various results of various actions that we had done in many lives past, this particular body on this particular occasion is brought together and it has to go certain amount of happiness, unhappiness, and what Patanjali Yogi calls Ayuhu and Bhoga and Jati. Jati means in which species the Prarabdha brings a person, either human birth, birth in a higher loka, or birth in a animal world, insect world, or even, if you have to believe Ramayana, even the birth of a stone, like Ahalya. So, it is dependent upon the result of our Prarabdha Karma. That is called Jati, species. Then how long are you? 10 years? 20 years? Few hours? 120 years? By the way, I strongly believe, every Hindu strongly believes that the death doesn't come because of corona, because of accident, because of somebody's shooting. Only when we anybody deserves death, then only it comes. Otherwise, it will never come. So, Prarabdha Sutra Graditam Shariram. Let it be there, let it not be there. I have nothing to do. If there is a piece of stone somewhere, let it be there, let it not be there. I don't care. That is the spiritual attitude, and that is the real attitude of a person who realized. And it is true not only in his life, it is also true in our life also. Only because of ignorance, we think, I am this body, I am this mind, so I act, react, happy, unhappy, etc. So slowly, every spiritual aspirant has to develop this spiritual attitude. But at the same time, oh, today I heard something wonderful. From today I will go on practicing. Let this body be healthy or unhealthy. I don't care. I will not do anything. This attitude is a very unspiritual attitude. What is the attitude? So long as there is a body, let it be taken care of. So long as there is a mind, let it also be taken care of in the right way. The point is, do not identify, but take care of them very well. So, a person whose mind has reached the state of identity with Brahman, his thoughts, his mind, where does it live? Brahmani Lina Vrittihi. All his thoughts are completely merged in one single thought, Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. Such a person, Punaha na pashyati, he doesn't see anything of this body mind, that means anything of this world. Such a person is called Tattva Veta, a true knower of Tattva or truth. And how does he live? Ananda Atmani, ever blissful. This is the meaning of this particular verse. The knower of truth does no more care whether this body spun out by the threads of prarabdha work falls or remains, like the garland on the neck of a cow. But his mind functions are at rest in Brahman, the essence of bliss. Then Shankaracharya is going to tell what is the real result of this sakshatkara, realization that I am Brahman. Bodhasya phalam uparatihi, eshaha uparatihi phalam. Vairagyasya phalam bodho, bodhasya uparatihi phalam. Sva anandanubhavat, shantihi esha eva uparatihi phalam. Three things he is talking about. First of all, he says, vairagyasya phalam bodha. If someone is endowed with a tremendous amount of dispassion. And do not forget, dispassion always is the result of true type of discrimination practiced for a long time under the guidance and instructions of a great spiritual teacher. Otherwise, reading books, one cannot develop this kind of discrimination. So, if anybody developed that true vairagya, what happens? Bodha. Bodha means knowledge. What is the knowledge? That Brahman alone, Brahma Satyam, Jagan Mithya, Jivo Brahmaiva Naparaha. This knowledge is the firm faith. With firm faith, this sadhaka develops this bodha, this knowledge. As a result of developing this knowledge, what is the result? Bodhasya phalam uparatihi. Uparati means complete detachment, complete withdrawal, completely not being affected. By what? By all this passing show that is called samsara or this world. Always mind you, by world means our body and mind. Body and mind means five senses organs of the sense organs and five of the what is called action organs. Our whole world consists of nothing but these five sense organs, and ceaselessly we are trying to feed how to make these five senses happy and how to make them happy by running away from unhappy things. Raga and dvesha. Whole life is running towards what we think gives us happiness and running away from what we know to be pain, suffering, grief, unhappiness, etc. So, is telling Bodha, when the firm conviction that Brahman alone is the truth, then what is the conviction? Jagat mithya. This world is appearance only, shadow only, like the figures on a screen, but never real. That means when a person really understands this, he will not have any more attachment to anything of this world, not even the slightest attachment. Then, what happens as a result of this indifference or withdrawal? Swa ananda anubhavaha. Ananda anubhavaha. Experience of the supreme bliss takes place because of this uparati or detachment. And this ananda is coming from inside, swa, from one's own self, not from anything outside. Very beautiful description here. Supposing you are hungry and you are looking for food and you think there is no food, and then you are planning to run somewhere outside and procure the food or go to a restaurant, eat food and come back. As you are about to go, you see that the refrigerator is making an odd noise. Then you run to close it properly, and there you find it is stacked full of food. And will you run to the shop? When everything is available at home, then one doesn't even think of going outside. So such is the state of a person who is capable of getting detachment. As soon as we become detached, immediately much greater happiness comes from within ourselves. This is called Sva Ananda Anubhavat. And as soon as a person starts enjoying the bliss that is his own real nature, Shantihi. So Shanti means what? I have no need to go anywhere outside. The thoughts become completely subsided, of course followed by no activity at all. And this is the real result of uparati. So what is uparati is phalam? Knowledge. What knowledge comes, what happens? He enjoys the bliss that is coming from within. And as soon as it comes, everything, the whole life, whole universe becomes that peace which passeth all understanding. Even from a utilitarian point of view, practical point of view, see, spiritual life is very, very profitable. As I said many often, very often, and I am only re-echoing the words of my Gurudev, Swami Yatheswaranandaji, if anybody knows some basic psychology, especially to understand one's own mind, one's own samskaras, then it of course, such a person never becomes a mental patient, but economically it is highly profitable because he need not go to any psychiatrist or psychologist and pay huge amount of money. Nowadays we know how costly it is to go to a psychologist. For every hour, they may be charging 100 or even more money just to listen to all our stupid, foolish thoughts and point out nothing new but what was there already stored up within our deep unconscious, of which we are blissfully unaware. So what is recovery? Recovery is nothing but to be aware of all the thoughts that are there within our own unconscious, which we ourselves have produced and which are now creating havoc to us. So that is why self-introspection, self-analysis is a great help to be extremely happy. Let me tell you something very important. Many years back, earlier when I joined, somehow I was trying to please all my elders. So I thought, if I please my elder, this is called currying the favor of superiors, then they will look upon me favorably, I may advance, etc. After a few years, by the grace of the Guru and God, the realization dawned that all these people, they can do nothing either to make me happy or unhappy. Everything depends upon me. From that day, this tremendous realization came that I am the only cause of my own happiness and I am the only cause of my own unhappiness. Do not blame anybody else. Dosh karo nahi goma amishvakhata sholile dube mori shama. That beautiful Bengali song is no one's fault, O mother, it is my own fault. So, the essence of this is that first of all, you obtain, develop vairagya, dispassion. As a result, you will become indifferent, detached from this world. As a result, that you will, it is not that you will lose any happiness that is coming from the objective world. There is no happiness, neither unhappiness in the outside world. All happiness is within, and that comes to the fore as soon as I start being a happy person, depending totally upon my own real self, then true peace will come. And that is what Holy Mother was telling, my child, if you want peace, then stop finding fault with others, start seeing good in others, start finding fault in yourself, then this whole world, there is not one who is a stranger, the whole world is your own self. Make the whole world your own, meaning look upon, realize this whole world as your own self, as if reflected in a billion billion mirrors, which we call others. Then we carry on to the next verse, 420th. Yat uttarottara abhavaha purva purvam tu nishfalam nivruttihi paramatriptihi anando anupamaha svataha. This is a hint which he is going to apply in the next few verses that come. What is it? The result, succeeding result, if we fail to obtain a result as a result of doing spiritual sadhana, and we are doing sadhana, but we are not obtaining the result. It should follow, if we are doing rightly, then the result must follow. And if the results are not coming, that means there is something wrong in the previous sadhana. That means, if the cause is defective, then the effect also will be defective. If we want the effect to be really great, then the cause must be the right cause. So, whatever number of spiritual practices, such as, if there is discrimination, viveka, it must be followed by vairagya. But if somebody says, I am following disciplines and I am practicing viveka, but vairagya is not coming, there is something seriously wrong with that kind of viveka the person is practicing. There is a defect. Why? Because there is a wonderful law. If the seed is nice, the effect also, the plant also, the fruit also must be absolutely fine. So this rule is a natural law and it cannot be violated and it is an eternal law. So if there is viveka, there will be vairagya. If there is vairagya, there will be withdrawal, detachment. If there is detachment, there is the experience of beautiful, unending bliss. And if there is bliss, there the mind will no longer be agitated, there would be shanti, peace. And if there is peace, then the man is firmly established in Paramatma. So this is the meaning of this verse, that yad yadi uttarottara abhavaha purva purvam tu nishfalam nivrutti paramatripti anando anupamaha svataha. If there is an absence of the succeeding stages means results. The preceding ones means the causes are futile. That means there is something wrong there. When the series is perfect, that means when the causes, when the sadhanas are really right and perfect, the cessation of the objective world, extreme satisfaction and matchless bliss follow as a matter of course. So again, I explained it to just now. I am re-putting it until the idea becomes very, very clear. I want all of us to understand these verses in the clearest manner that is possible. If there is true discrimination viveka and there is no reason why dispassion doesn't follow, and if there is true dispassion, the mind will go to the highest ideal and becomes fixed there. When the mind is fixed in the highest ideal, here highest ideal is God, Ishtadevata or Paramatma, Parabrahma, then that unending, what is called Shashvata Sukha, Ananta Sukha, Ananda, Satchidananda is inevitable. When there is Satchidananda, the mind, the thoughts never again flow. And when there is pure peace of mind, that is what Jesus Christ calls a peace that passeth all understanding. That means the type of peace that we experience in this world is very temporary, very shallow, full of defects. Simple example is, if you are hungry, you eat food and you get temporary peace, but there is full of regrets. This food is okay, but if there was the other item, it would have been better. So whatever type of food a person may eat, always there is some dissatisfaction remaining. I explained earlier three defects of experiences of any object in this world. First is, whatever happiness it may give, still there is a lot of dissatisfaction. This is okay, but that could have been added to this. Second, always this experience brings is mixed up with the opposite, which is sukha, mixed up with dukkha. Third, whenever we experience some pleasant object, it produces, strengthens our samskara. The world is good. I am getting happiness. I want to experience the same object again and again and again and again. But when a person practices viveka, vairagya, then svatmanubhuti, paramananda and ultimately shanti, such a person, he never wants anything else. He goes beyond time. He experiences timeless happiness, eternal happiness, spaceless happiness or happiness beyond space, which is called desha, kala, atita, ananda. Now, he is going to elaborate these ideas in the next coming few verses, and we will discuss these beautiful verses in our next class. Om Jananim Sharadam Devim Ramakrishnam Jagadgurum Pada Padme Tayu Sritva Pranamami Muhur Muhu. May Sri Ramakrishna, Holy Mother and Swami Vivekananda bless us all with bhakti, viveka, vairagya and shanti.